We've been talking for the last 3 weeks about the divine virtues, love, faith, and hope, and the practices that go with them. And if you recall, they're the divine virtues because of St. Paul, that he says at the end of the love chapter in 1 Corinthians 13, that great letter, "For these three abide, faith, hope, and love, and the greatest of these is..." Oh, good, you all pass. Those of you who said it, you get to go to heaven. The rest of you, well, keep working. There'll be a makeup test later. We now start on the sort of what are known as the cardinal virtues. And the funny thing about the cardinal virtues is there are four of them, because you have to have seven, right? We know that's a divine number. And so in the medieval age, there were four cardinal virtues. But there were like 12 lists of cardinal virtues, so there's really 36 cardinal virtues, but there are only four. So we're going to start with courage because of the readings, but also because it seems like that's the next one listed, courage. And we're going to balance that today by talking about a second virtue, and that is humility, because you have to have both of them together. And they immediately make sense as opposites, but I'm going to tell you they are not opposites, they're complementary. And there's a big difference between the two thoughts. But courage in our day has really been reduced down to the willingness to do violence. Hear me, the courage of our day has been reduced down to the willingness to do violence and the willingness to stand up for our own rights. And this is a grave distortion and maybe even a destruction of the virtue of courage. Because courage is not first and foremost about violence, and it certainly is not about our own rights. That's not courage. It's a lot of things, but it's not courage. Courage comes from the root word, which we still get in French, encore, the heart. And courage is to follow, to be led by the heart. And to be led in particular by the heart shaped by the Christian virtues is a different thing than the willingness to do violence. Because whatever else the guy in Braveheart might have been driven by, I don't think forgiveness was high on his list of priorities. I watched the movie a couple of times, and it isn't mentioned. What does it mean to follow the heart? And I'm going to give you a couple of litmus tests for these two virtues. And the first litmus test of courage, if you want to know if it's courage or if it's just the willingness to do what needs to be done, courage demands self-sacrifice. Courage demands self-sacrifice. So if you are working yourself up to really do something and it doesn't require that it costs you anything, that probably isn't courage. It might be good. It might be something that needs to be done, but it probably isn't requiring courage. If we're going to ask for courage, courage demands self-sacrifice. This really great example of this. I was sitting on the first time I ever rode on a double-decker plane. It was huge. If you've ever sat on one, you feel like a number. The plane was magnificent, and it was old. They actually had an old smoking section roped off. They weren't even using it, probably. But as we walked by it, you could see smokers stop and cross themselves, like, oh, that was a good one. And as we were loading on the plane, I had this really great window seat. And there were like 15 people. I don't remember how many there actually are, but 15 sounds good. All the way across the plane, it's a huge plane. And I had this seat where I could see down the side. And as I had walked by the pilot's cabin, there were all these people chattering. And it took like 35 minutes to load the plane. We finally all get on the plane. Luggage is all up in the racks. We're all sitting down. And I look out the window, and the pilot has gotten out of the plane and is walking around. And then the pilot gets back on the plane, and he makes an announcement. And he says, "Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry to tell you this, but there's a mechanical issue with the plane that I don't trust. And so, as inconvenient as it is, I simply don't feel like it's safe to fly the plane. We're going to have to get off the plane and wait for another plane to come. And because of the number of people, it's going to be a significant weight. And I want to tell you, it's my decision, but I just don't feel like it's the best thing for us to do. I don't know if you realize this, but when we go through security, many of us check our souls in with security. We leave it there so that when we get onto the plane, we are not soulful creatures anymore. And you could see that people were driven by their passions. It was not pretty. But I had a great little insight as I listened to the captain give that announcement. And one thing is, he took ownership for the decision. And you realize how much in our lives we sort of skirt around ownership of decisions. Well, the mechanic says, it wasn't the mechanic, he got out and looked at the plane. Well, my co-pilot's a little drunk. We don't want to fly with him. I mean, he didn't blame anybody. He took full responsibility. How often do you hear that? That's courage. But more than that, he didn't fly because we all wanted him to fly. He refused to fly because it was the right thing. That's courage. Courage does the right and demands self-sacrifice. And he took a berating as we got off the plane. I, for one, said thank you, because I don't want to fly in a plane that the pilot doesn't trust. But people forgot that, you know. We have a lot of sense of courage about standing up for ourselves, but to be encore, to be from the heart, as a Christian, our heart should be shaped by those virtues we've already talked about. Because what comes from the heart? Trust, faith, hope, and love. Courage acts out of these three things, or else it is not courage. Faith, hope, and love. We have a kind of abundance of a distortion of courage about violence, but on the other side, we have a distortion of its complementary virtue, humility. Humility tells the truth. Humility tells the truth. Now, I have found in myself, and I've heard it in other people, usually when we bring humility into a conversation, we are actually not telling the truth. I have a lot of people say, well, I'm not really qualified to do that. Or I might say, you know, that's not really my gift, in good Christian language. The Spirit didn't gift me to do that. Usually what we really are saying, the truth is, what we're saying is, I don't want to do that. I'm not willing to do that. We're not saying really that we're incapable. Or we say, I don't know how to do that. And I had a wonderful experience. This morning, I've been working on this sermon all week. I got up this morning, and Henry got up with me, which is not unusual on Sunday mornings, and I'm trying to rush around, and he says, I want panda cereal. And you can imagine how delicious panda cereal is for a three-year-old to demand it first thing in the morning. And I gave him applesauce because I love him. And he looked at me, and he looked at the applesauce, and he said, I want pandas. This is not pandas. So I gave him a spoon, and Henry said, I don't know how to eat this. He looks at the spoon like he has never seen a spoon before. Child weighed by wolves, all of a sudden lives in my house. He's like, I don't know what this is. He holds a spoon like he didn't know how to hold this. I'm like, this does not bode well. You're already an adult. How many of you, hey, would you like to teach a class? You've been a Christian for a long time. You got a really strong faith. I need somebody to teach a class. And you go, a Bible? I don't, what is that? I've never seen this before. Is this a book? Does it open? I said, when courage and humility are blended together, there is so much power in that, but it is not the power that we imagine in our media or in our movies or in our desire for violence. This morning, the reason these virtues are at the forefront this morning is because of the story of Stephen. In the story of Stephen, Stephen is being stoned to death for telling the truth. And while he's standing there being stoned, he says the most amazing thing. Lord, don't hold this against them. Don't hold this against them. And it says it as a kyrie, as a cry of the heart. Don't hold this against them. I don't think that Stephen was standing there getting pelted with stones going, what would Jesus do now? Courage doesn't show up in the last moment. Courage is shaped by a life of discipline, by a life of doing your homework, of doing the work of being in the presence of God day in and day out, shaping the heart so that when the heart must bleed, the heart bleeds what it should. Faith, hope, and love. Because our hearts are not necessarily naturally bent to those three virtues. You have to do the work in order to have the courage at the moment that it's demanded. The guy who landed the plane on the Hudson River didn't wake up that morning and go, I hope I can handle a crisis. He had been training for that his whole life. When we think about the Christian life and we think about these great moments of courage, we often say, well, I hope I can do it when the moment demands it. I don't want you on the field. Or we say, look, that's just not me. And that's not okay either. That's not a life offered to God as a living stone. You see, this reading from 1 Peter shapes the way that I think of the church. If I could say there's one passage that is my ecclesiology of the church, it might be this little passage from this letter. Present your lives as living stones. You may be rejected by everyone else, but present your lives as living stones to God, that He may build up a house, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people set aside. God didn't call you to sit on the couch and watch heroes on television. God didn't call you to be out there in front demanding what's yours. That day is over. We are called into a glorious reality where we are the living stones of God. We are a royal priesthood shaping the destiny of creation. We are the people of Christ redeeming the living world. And we do that work by going down into the heart where Jesus teaches us throughout the Gospel of John that we abide in Him. Encore. The heart must abide in Christ. And the Spirit abides within the heart. If you've been paying attention to this gospel your life, you've known that the word abide is constantly soaks the translations of this. And even here where it says, I go because there are many dwelling places, the word really is abodes, and they avoided it because it was old-fashioned. But it's a great concept because the difference between moving in and abiding somewhere is the difference between the guy who shows up at a cubicle and he sits down, he does his work every day, he goes home, and when he packs up at the end, he doesn't take anything with him but the paper clips. And the woman who comes in with like three boxes of pictures of her cats, and you can't get rid of her any more than you can get rid of a government employee. To abide is to move in, to set up residence, to pitch your tent. To abide in Christ is not to have a fleeting conversation. It's not to meet Christ on Sundays. It is to move in. It is to put up pictures. It is to settle down and wiggle in to the presence of God. And when you do that, when you know where you are, when you abide in Christ as he abides in God, the Spirit will fill you and your heart will be encore courageous. Because when you know that your love has no limits, that your faith is rooted in the knowledge of where you live, when your hope knows the face of God, no one is a threat to you. No situation can remove you from the love that you live in. No person can damage the faith that you abide within. There is no threat for that one. And so you can be courageous and humble at the same time. Encore in the heart. The work is to spend time in the heart, where our thoughts take root in action. To spend time in silence with Christ, to spend time in prayer, to spend time with the Word, to spend time with each other, to be abiding with God, so that when the moment comes when your heart must bleed, your love will color the world. My example of the moment when courage and humility comes together seems like a small thing. I was in a grocery store when Amy and I were dating, and so I noticed this young mom with two kids, a little boy who's about 4 and a little girl who's probably 6 or 7. And I watched that little boy take a can of peas and Crocodile Dundee, a lady at the other end of the aisle. And I would never have believed that a 4-year-old could throw like that, but now I have Henry. And he threw a line drive that would make a major leaguer proud, and he beamed this lady pushing a grocery cart at the other end of the aisle. And the mother did the unexpected thing. She grabbed that boy in one arm, and she bolted right for the lady. And the first words out of her mouth were, "I'm sorry." And she didn't have to do that. You all know the geography of grocery stores very well. Many of you have utilized them to this defense. You could just step around the aisle, and as far as that lady was concerned, a meteorite fell off a shelf and beamed her. We live in a culture of dodgers. And it seems like a small thing, but as I watched it unfold, I stood there and thought, that's as Christian as it gets. She told the truth, and she gave up security to do it. We are not called to be like the world. We are called to be a royal nation of priests, bearing witness to the world that the God of love has walked the earth, bearing witness that it still has a name. We are to be truly virtuous people. It is the only way there is. Before you were baptized, you could walk any way you wanted. But now, there is one way. There is one life. Let us walk it together. Encore from the heart.